Chapter 86. Rachel was quiet now, staring blankly at the cabin of the G-4 as the plane headed south along the Canadian coastline of the Gulf of St. Lawrence. Tallon sat nearby, talking to Corky. Despite the majority of evidence suggesting the meteorite was authentic, Corky's admission that the nickel content was outside the pre-established mid-range values had served to rekindle Rachel's initial suspicion. Secretly planting a meteorite beneath the ice only made sense as part of a brilliantly conceived fraud. Nonetheless, the remaining scientific evidence pointed toward the meteorite's validity. Rachel turned from the window, glancing down at the disc-shaped meteorite sample in her hand. The tiny chondrils shimmered. Tolland and Corky had been discussing these metallic chondrils for some time now, talking in scientific terms well over Rachel's head. Equilibrated olivine levels, metastable glass matrices, and metamorphic rehomogenation. Nonetheless, the upshot was clear. Corky and Tolland were in agreement that the chondrils were decidedly meteoric. No fudging of that data. Rachel rotated the disc-shaped specimen in her hand, running a finger over the rim where part of the fusion crust was visible. The charring looked relatively fresh, certainly not 300 years old, although Corky had explained that the meteorite had been hermetically sealed in ice and avoided atmospheric erosion. This seemed logical. Rachel had seen programs on television where human remains were dug from the ice after 4,000 years, and the person's skin looked almost perfect. As she studied the fusion crust, an odd thought occurred to her. An obvious piece of data had been omitted. Rachel wondered if it had simply been an oversight in all the data that was thrown at her, or did someone simply forget to mention it? She turned suddenly to Corky. Did anyone date the fusion crust? Corky glanced over, looking confused. What? Did anyone date the burn? That is, do we know for a fact that the burn on the rock occurred at exactly the time of the Jungersall fall?
Sorry, Corky said. That's impossible to date. Oxidation resets all the necessary isotopic markers. Besides, radioisotope decay rates are too slow to measure anything under 500 years.
Rachel considered that a moment, understanding now why the burn date was not part of the data.
So, as far as we know, this rock could have been burned in the Middle Ages or last weekend, right?
Tallon chuckled. Nobody said science had all the answers. Rachel let her mind wander aloud.
A fusion crust is essentially just a severe burn. Technically speaking, the burn on this rock could have happened at any time in the past half century, in any number of different ways.
Wrong, Corky said. Burned in any number of different ways? No, burned in one way, falling through the atmosphere.
There's no other possibility? How about in a furnace?
A furnace, Corky said. These samples were examined under an electron microscope. Even the cleanest furnace on Earth would have left fuel residue all over the stone. Nuclear, chemical, fossil fuel. Forget it. And how about the striations from streaking through the atmosphere? You wouldn't get those in a furnace.
Rachel had forgotten about the orientation striations on the meteorite. It did indeed appear to have fallen through the air.
How about a volcano? She ventured. Ejecta thrown violently from an eruption.
Corky shook his head.
The burn is far too clean.
Rachel glanced at Tolland.
The oceanographer nodded. Sorry, I've had some experience with volcanoes, both above and below water. Corky's right. Volcanic ejecta is penetrated by dozens of toxins. Carbon dioxide, sulfur dioxide, hydrogen sulfide, hydrochloric acid. All of which would have been detected in our electronic scans. That fusion crust, whether we like it or not, is the result of a clean, atmospheric friction burn.